Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today we are going to be talking about wholehearted living. What might that mean? You know, so many people will say to me, well, my doctor takes care of my health. That's his job. I don't worry about it. I've got a job to go to every day. Or mothers will say, I've got a job at home. I've got a job at work. Fathers will say, my job at work is so busy, I can't take care of anything else. So that's your job. I think we kind of throw that word around so much that when we have to bounce around and see how we are living fully in this life, how we are participating in all aspects of our life and really have responsibility for it, I think we kind of become upfront and we say, oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, that's too much. Oh, I'm overloaded on this side. Oh my gosh, I don't have time for that. And isn't that exactly where we want to be? That's at the breach point of saying, what are we doing? How are we living? Are we really keeping ourselves balanced across all four fronts? Or even if we do take a tip, it's not so bad and we can recover. Or are we just saying, I'm putting all my pennies in this box, that's the way I live. And when that particular box hits the wall and crumbles, then we're kind of falling apart. We don't know who we are, where we're going, or what we're going to do. I can tell you in the past 10 years, the majority of our listeners, majority of our guests, and almost everyone that hears us speaking on this show can say, been there, done that in some form. Today, my guest is Haley Bock, and the book is Life Incorporated, A Practical Guide to Wholehearted Living. Haley, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. A pleasure to be here with you and all your listeners.
So don't you think the past few years has just been a toss-up in the sky and let's see what hits the ground, right?
Yes, I do. And I feel like we're getting more and more along those lines, you know, at some point, because the world is just so fast-paced and maybe can correct ourselves that we're more and more willing to just sort of, you know, fling it forward up to chance as opposed to maybe putting down a rudder or two.
Yeah, you know, this is like this big push where, oh, let's do meditation, and people will go do meditation for 10 minutes and then, you know, they'll pick up their five cell phones that are on the side of them and spend the next hour, you know, catching up, so to speak. Or they will go to yoga and then on their way out they will be, oh my gosh, you know, get me five coffees. I feel like I'm going to fall asleep because I'm too relaxed now. You know, I think we have concepts where we're trying to make changes. We might understand that there's an imbalance in some things that we do, but we're trying to correct them with things that are creating a further imbalance. In other words, if we have an apple pie and we say 9/10 of that is my work and I only have 10% left for my family, but now you're asking me to do yoga, you're asking me to do meditation, you're asking me to exercise, where is that going to come from? You know, and it really, things start to suffer. I think we see people that are really frazzled at this point, don't you think?
I do think so. And I, you know, I think there's a couple of pieces to that as I listen to you, you know, speak. Some of us are very constricted on time. But on the other hand, you know, we can have control over that time. I think that and I do this myself, right? I play as if life is on top of me. It's like, well, I would, but this or that. And there's some sort of, especially as Americans, this glorification of how exhausted are you at the end of the day? You know, because if you're not rolling in on your knees and have a few gripes to make, then it's as if you're not doing enough.
Right.
And I see that more and more. It's as if we're careening through life. And I do triathlon, which is, you know, possibly the most stressful, maybe, you know, not the greatest sport to do, but I see people go from, it's like, okay, I've got to do, you know, this stage of my day, and then check, I'm going to make a transition. I'm going to do my meditation app so I can slide across and get that, you know, feel-good icon for the day. But we don't really step back to do some deconstruction so we can pull apart and make more of what's here, and instead get more and more caught up with trying to fit more in and say, hey, I checked that box, it's all good.
Yeah, because I think once we start to quantify it and put it in a box and say, this is a time for this, we don't understand that that meditation actually has to expand across all moments of our life, awake, asleep, whatever that might be. And we just think that it is just for that time, you know? In other words, we don't see how it fits into our life. We only see that it has a quantified time on our timer.
Yeah, and typically we're doing a lot of these things. We're signing up for a yoga class or a mindfulness class because we see others doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so from our view on our balcony and you know, assessing at a very high level of how we want our lives to be, we see someone who appears to have it together do one of these practices, so then we adopt it on our own. But what we miss is like you said, that deeper intention. What's the intention of the practice? Everything that we do every day is deepening something. We're not meant to just water ski across the surface of our life. We should be going deep with each of these. And if we understood that mindfulness is that exercise of meditation is to really give us the ability and our brains the ability to understand that thoughts are thoughts, they're not necessarily true, and that we can have a moment before reaction where we can respond instead and see the bigger picture, thus giving us much more perspective on life and calm and ease, then we would benefit from the practice. But what we do is we tick off the box and we say, yeah, okay, so yeah, I did it for the 21 days and I don't know, I don't feel that different, so I'm going to delete that app now.
Yeah, it's also the concept, you know, I'm going to buy the lingo, and it will deliver my, quote, solution, and it's going to look like this because I've seen it and experienced it and recognized it or reflected it from someone else, and that's what I equal expect. And I think sometimes that's really, are we living our life as a, you know, buying products and buying things versus being from the inside when you're really looking at everything else as an outside service. You know, life is not full of commodities, you know what I mean? It's not everything that we're supposed to buy, purchase, have, get, take, and everything, when really we have to create stuff from our inside. And can we really even do that? You know, so many, it takes them a very long time to understand that concept. But once they get it, it's like, oh my gosh, I could never live the other way. Others might say, I'll dabble in it and, you know, I'll see if I think I can do it.
Yeah, and, you know, that brings to mind, I'm constantly, you know, reading articles on, really it is this vast topic, but you read these interviews that occur in hospice, you know, with folks that are end of life, and really that top regret is, and it may be ad nauseum now, but it is, I didn't live the life that was unique to myself. I lived to the expectations of another, whether it was, you know, said or just simply a perceived expectation. And so that's what we do. We're in a constant state of comparison, of trying to shore up, you know, any deficiencies, when the reality is there is no comparison and there are no deficiencies. When we stand in our unique being, we are whole, we are complete.
You know, I work a lot with end-of-life clients. In fact, I had spoken to a woman the other day, and she's 93. And when I walked into her home, she said, she plopped down on the couch, and she says, oh, God, why is not God not taking me? I'm bored. She said, I'm going to be 94 next week, and I'm bored. And I went, oh, okay. You know, and I just kind of went, oh, I mean, what else are you going to say, right? But then we look at it, still others who might be in their 70s and 80s and they're still angry with the world. They're angry with life around them. I mean, you can hear it in their voice. You can sense it in the way they react and act. And you wonder what's going to happen there. And even still, I had another client who at end of life, she wanted to dump all of this stuff on the people who had left behind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that little speech before you die, it's sort of like, hey, here comes my secrets. Let me just tell you what I really think. Dump it all out, and boom, close your eyes, and you're gone, and you're going, oh, dear, now what? You know?
Yeah, no, you really left people holding the bag. There's no going back to that well for unpacking.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we do. We so often, you know, we keep these resentments. We assume that our loved ones should know. We assume that the world should treat us better. We assume this or that. And and the thing is, we have to communicate. We have to articulate what it is that we need because people don't know. You know, we all have this such unique owner's manuals. We really do. And we can't just hand over a manual and say, hey, could you read this, you know, so that you know all my triggers and my past and et cetera. And instead we end up harboring all this resentment. When we do that, you know, you hear the saying, it's like eating rat poison and expecting a rat to die. We're just poisoning and diminishing ourselves. And that's so sad. I mean, when you said that 93-year-old woman said, you know, I'm bored, why can't I just die? That almost, you know, frightens me because I think of, and I have two young kids myself, so I'm in the thick of it. They're 9 and 7, but the phrase I'm bored comes up a lot. And I have to work really hard not to give them the quick outlet of here's a screen or let me solve this for you because I think more and more that statement of I'm bored, so I'm just ready to die is somewhat becoming a bit of an unspoken, you know, belief in society, in American society.
Well, that brings us up to connectedness, because when we say, what are we connected to? When you're bored, means that something of an outside influence is not stimulating you, is not engaging you. You cannot find it from your inside and self, take care of yourself, being happy or being whatever you need to be, whatever it is. You always are looking for it from someplace else. And I can remember saying to her, open up your window, watch the leaves blow. You know, she says, oh, no, I have snakes on my patio. I said, well, open up the blinds and watch them, see what they do. You know, it's like connect to something else outside of yourself. And it doesn't always have to be something that's going to give you back all the time. I think we always have this concept that I'm going to do something and I expect, I demand, I command that I'm going to have, you know, the result that I want back. And I think that's where we get caught up in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I studied, and I mentioned his work in the book as well, that Stuart Brown, who founded the Institute of Play. And what you're getting at is what how Stuart would define play, which is engaging in something with no outcome. Right. There's no perceived outcome. You're not doing it for a reason. You're not doing it to impress anybody. The time can pass and you wouldn't even know it, and you don't care what you look like. And he found the importance of play from studying mass killers of all things. And finding that in murderers who would do mass murders, that what they lacked in their youth was the ability to play. They all had very, very controlling parents who were always there to fill time, to plug time, to tell you what to do with your time, et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't allow for this elasticity that's needed in the brain. It's our ability to adapt to change and to be okay in that suspension of I'm not here yet, I'm not quite there. And so how can I be comfortable with things just as they are? He was so moved by his work that he stopped, you know, studying that end of the spectrum and started studying the importance of play. I love one of his quotes, the opposite of play isn't work, it's depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so for our kids and as much as for our kids as for ourselves as adults, we need to have outlets of play. We need to go out, find some, you know, those things that we love to do, and not put an expectation on it, but know that this is something I connect with, whether it's fishing, whether it's going for a walk, whether it's a conversation over a glass of wine with a friend, and we need to allow ourselves to get lost in that.
You know, I think we look at it through history. I grew up in the 50s, and that was the way life was then. I think really we've done a great disservice to our children and grandchildren when in the 90s and early 2000s, when everywhere and everything and everybody is expected to pacify everyone around each other. You know, we have to have kids where, oh, what do you need? How can I help you? You have to be praised at every point. And we're doing the same thing with millennials, and we're doing the same thing with people in jobs right now.
And, yeah, we are.
And it really takes away from the it takes away from self-responsibility, self-worth, self-value, because you don't know what the self is, and you're really looking at it as an outside influence about what your appearance is. You know, so many people are questing for how much can they fit in their obituary, when really, you know, if you look at it a long time ago, it was just a name and a date. I just showed up, I lived, and I'm gone. You know,
it's all about, right.
It's quite a different concept now, I think.
Yeah, it is. And something you said just made me, just reminded me of this startling fact that's just come out. I don't know the study, but that humans have now somehow achieved a shorter attention span than goldfish. Apparently, goldfish are at 9 seconds, and humans are at 8 seconds now.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, I think, you know, I live in Seattle, I'm in Amazon's backyard. If I want something, I can often click and I get it that day. And there's this, we no longer have to wait, you know, and that space of like discomfort, or, you know, what we might call boredom, right, which is now associated
right.
with discomfort. We don't have to spend a lot of time in that space anymore. So, instead, we can scratch all these itches, whether it's, I don't really know who I am, so I don't want to go and look, so I'm going to go buy something. I'm going to go purchase something. I'm going to go get online and surf and fill my head with information that I can then forget 10 seconds later, because I'll just go up, look at it over again, and we just busy ourselves as we run further and further away from ourselves. And you know, I've done a lot of public speaking, certainly in my past, and, you know, you hear the stat that people fear public speaking more than death, and I often wonder if now it might be the case where more than death, we fear being alone with ourselves with nothing to do.
Right. You know, I'll tell you, I think about that a lot because, like I said, I do a lot of elder care work, health care. And what I find is that a lot of people will say, don't want to live alone. And we think about it, or I don't want to die alone. And I think really society has moved very far into the middle. I almost look at life as a bell curve these days, you know, where if you're in, you know, you're born, and of course you have your parents around you and everything, but you're kind of still like in your own alone. But then you really have this incessant need for all of this stuff, people, places, and things in the middle. And then on the end, you're really kind of like some of the elders, you know, over 60s or 70s. They're left in their home by themselves. They have no human contact. And then, you know, eventually let's just ship you off to some place or something so that we can be, our conscience can be cleared, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, in the beginning, they always send them off to daycare. They send them off to babysitters, you know. So kind mm-hmm. of it's in the middle is really that place. It's just like spinning. Like it's almost like a drug dealer in the middle, you know, because the drug dealer keeps promising you something else. The more you get, the more you want, the more you can have. And it's just so seductive in a way. But then when you get to the end, you're going like, oh, okay, so what now, you know? And I think
yeah.
so many are stuck there.
You look at all these ornaments that you've, you know, these quote-unquote ornaments you've collected and wondering, gee, what it was all about. And that's what you
right.
hear in those end-of-life conversations is, no. I'd rather have none of that and have a life rich of experience that was meaningful just to me, just only to me, if that's, you know, all that could happen. And so I have worked very hard because just like everybody else, I got caught up in that very fast-moving current that we are so good at especially again here in America, and I know other countries as well, where it's like, you know, you sort of get on that people mover, and before you know it, you're collecting all these things, and then you're going up, and then it's like, well, I guess, you know, if I'm at this position, then I should want that position, okay? And then this, that, et cetera. Now the house, now the marriage, now the kids, check, 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 check. And I got very caught up in that and did all of that. And it feels good to some extent, but just like anything, if it's not really connected to your particular passion, you're not, and by passion, I don't mean infatuation, right? Sort of like, woo, what'll make me feel good in this moment, but your deep seated passion, then it wears off very quickly. It's like people checking Facebook or social media for likes, et cetera, right? We're looking for a little feel good, a little pat on the back that you matter. And the reason why we keep going back and refreshing the screens is because the longevity of fulfillment that that creates is very short, and it just gets shorter and shorter. And it's the same with us as we go for those, you know, more broader sweeping achievements of climbing the corporate ladder or doing what, you know, dad always wanted me to do, or marrying that woman or that man that I should, getting that house and setting down roots, because that's a sign of maturity and establishment. And so we've got to really take a pause. And I can tell you this, and Jeanette, I'm curious. I have found that if people have not taken a pause to really reassess this in their lives, that life has a habit of forcing you to do that and sort of ripping away.
The wall will be bigger and harder and cement-like than ever, because it'll end up in the 50s and 60s of cancer. It will end up in, you will lose your job before you get to the retirement age. You will end up, your husbands will leave you or whatever it might be. You might get sick. It could be almost anything. And we see this quite often in history, you know. Many times people will say things happen to them in their 50s, early 60s, and then they're just plain living out the rest of their life. And, you know, I think sometimes there are some people who have found core beliefs, core values is what I call them, and morals of their own life of how they should appear in life. In other words, I should farm my land and eat the food. I should take care of children so I'll babysit. I will drive the school bus because I know the kids need to get there, whatever. Those are similar ideas of core beliefs and standards. But we look at it and we say, there are some who will sit there and they will say, but I demand this, I demand that. I mean, we see this playing out in healthcare now. I have to have access to insurance. Why? But do you have to have access to insurance? Do you have to have access, in other words, to feed your fear that you might have something wrong that you can't control? That's really the essence of what they're saying. In other words, you better save me because I'm going to pay everything in my life to be able to have you save me. And then when they don't, then there's kind of like this whole other, you know, scenario that you get involved in. So we really see it playing out, and I think in a lot of different venues, you know, with the banks when they had all those issues, you know, many years ago, and then housing, and then now it's in healthcare. It's how many walls can we keep hitting till we actually decide what's important in life and what isn't?
Yeah, and I have found, taking that down to the personal level, and it happened to me as well, that when I was choosing to exist in a situation that was not optimal for me, you know, after so long of defaulting on why the hell it was that I was here, you know,
that's
put on the planet,
that
the universe just, you know, ripped it all apart. So I had to look. And I, you know, I'm in my 40s. I don't know if it's particular to my age group, or you get that affinity group thing going on as well, right, where you get pregnant and all of a sudden everybody around you is pregnant. But, you know, I'm just seeing so much of that happen in some smaller but yet in some very big and bigger ways. And I don't know if this has always been a pattern or if it's escalating at all, if you looked at the continuum, you know, from the past over. there's a lot of shaking out that's going on right now. And I think a lot of people are understanding the need for that shakeout.
Right.
And my hope is that we all take that opportunity to, okay, connect with our life, you know.
Well, I think with when things shake out, though, a lot of energy gets dislodged that had been attached to it. As I've said to you before, I live in New Orleans, and just this week they started taking down the Confederate monuments here. It was not a good thing because that is part of the history of the city. However, a select group, quote, came into town and says, we don't want them here. We don't like them. Yet these are outsiders, you know, because New Orleans was, never had a trouble with race, never had a trouble with financial people, and never had trouble with anybody. In other words, everybody and everything got along here. And after Katrina, all these people started coming into town saying, oh, you need a house. You have to have your washing machine inside your house. You have to have air conditioning. Oh, my gosh, there's a hole in your roof. We have to fix that. And the answer is we've gotten quite well along all these decades without that.
Right.
We did not
right.
need to have our washing machine in the house. Why? You know? So what if there's flowers growing through the cracks in your ceiling, you know, gotten used to the heat, you know, things like that. I mean, it's just because the people just understood, and it was the way you are. In other words, been more connected to the earth, more connected to the people around you. You could have a $5 million house next to one that's worth, you know, that should have been knocked down. Just because that is the way it is. But yet these people come in and bring in their beliefs, their ideas, and say, we're going to shake it, we're going to rattle it, we're going to make it, because we don't believe it should be that way. You know, I even had this conversation with a particular person, and he was talking about working with the homeless. And of course, you know, when you're of a higher echelon and you want to go work with those that have less, I said, I really have trouble with the word homeless. They have a home. They've chosen to have a home in the earth. They've chosen to have a home under the bridge. They've chosen to have a home wherever their space is. Their home is them. So they've really found a home in themselves. What you're saying is that they have to have a place that looks like what you reflected as a house. So we kind of have that very deep time now where a lot of our concepts, our words, our languages are coming up for debate. What's important, what isn't? What kind of, with the Confederate monuments, what do they mean to me, what do they not? Maybe what did a house mean to you, or what does it mean to me? And do we have to influence everybody to live the way we believe they should? Do we believe that a homeless person has to have a house and live this way? And, oh, my gosh, he can't walk with those shoes? Why? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, we're very ego-driven. And so, you know, one of the ultimate experiences as a human is to find a solution, not just for yourself, but then to say, here, this will fix others. You know, we at some point get off on that, and while that can be helpful, at some point, if you're then creating a template to which you would like everybody else to fit in, that separates them for their own uniqueness. I mean, like you said, I would much, you know, I love going to places like New Orleans and Austin, Texas. You know, I'm an avid runner, and so I always go out for a run no matter what city I'm in. And I love it because I don't see the same house twice, you know, and it's just at some moments, you know, I'm almost at a walk, like just taking in the way each person has you know, sort of decorated their own dwelling. And I love that. Those are the places I remember. I don't appreciate the cities where, you know, all of the developments, it's like we all look like one another because we don't all need the same thing. We don't want the same thing, but we think we do.
But also, too, what is the concept of solutions? And I think this is important because when in your book you talk about living from the inside out, because solutions are always coming from the outside in. Someone's giving that to you, helping you, doing it, fixing it, whatever. And really, is it the core of what is inside of you that you may feel that you need a little bit help on? You know, so many people are quick to say, we have to hurry up, we have to give this person money, we have to give this person drugs, you know, we have to give them this, that, or the other. When really, it may not at all be what they need. It may be a reflection of what you need to fill up yourself has nothing to do with the person who's receiving.
Yeah, this makes me think of the concept of silence, right? It's like when asking I used to train people on how to have conversations and really had to work on the importance of allowing silence into conversations.
Right.
And people are so uncomfortable with it and wanting to jump in and hop in. And it's not, you know, it's when I'm in a conversation and I ask somebody who is having a difficult time, you know, please tell me how you are or describe what is going on. Mm-hmm. And there's that space. So often we, as the person that's asking the question, we give them, I don't know, maybe five, if they're lucky, we give them 10 seconds, although that's agony by then. And we start jumping in and filling it in, like, you know, oh, it's probably this, or actually it's fine. And it's not because the person that we're asking is uncomfortable with the silence. It's because we're uncomfortable with it. You know, they're just simply sorting through and processing everything. So I would agree with you in that we do, when it comes to medication, when it comes to suggesting, you know, a job for someone or that they get out there and start looking for options, that it's due more to our own discomfort or us layering that onto the individual instead of really asking where they are.
A little bit about your book, Life Incorporated, when you say really about what is your foundation. Because I think everything that we've spoken about so far is from the outside. We were working now towards the inside. And I think really that's about having a foundation. Because if you don't have that foundation, if you can't speak up to someone and say, that's not what I want, or I'm quite fine how I am, or this is what I need, you really need to be firm in what your foundation is, what your morals are, what your beliefs, what your core values are, and how you can continue to keep yourself self-nurtured, self-worth, self-value is really what's so vitally important, because all of this stuff we've spoken about so far is all outside of you, and it's coming at you. It is bombarding you like the sun's rays every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't stop until you go to sleep, and even then sometimes you feel like you can't shut the train off. So I think really when you talk about in your book, you know, about going from the inside out, I think really that's important, about setting that foundation, those roots of your tree, and that's where it starts, right?
Yeah, that is where it starts. And I do use the analogy of a tree in the book to illustrate a life, not just because I love trees being out in the Pacific Northwest, but because the analogy lends itself so well. And so,
right.
you know, the foundation or the soil, if you will, is our inner life, which really speaks to our emotional and spiritual well-being. And at its root is the quality of relationship we have with ourselves, the level of comfort we have with being with self, and the acceptance. And that was a real, quote-unquote, opportunity for me. I had spent so long trying to fill my bucket from other sources that when it came time to be still, because the universe handed me one of those moments of, okay, now you're an island, so you're going to have some time to think. I was very afraid to connect with that because I didn't really know what was there. I didn't know if there was anything of substance or if what I found would be, you know, a positive thing or not. So laying that foundation with your inner life, for me, using mindfulness exercises to really connect with thoughts and emotion and to begin to drive that wedge between that thought and the reaction and to see that I am the ocean and not the waves was very helpful for me to then drop anchor and find and plant in myself. And then the roots of the tree are those tendrils we can send deep, and that really is even more so of what you need. You know, you have to have a foundation, good soil, so that your roots can grasp onto something.
Mm-hmm.
But those roots are, you know, what are your core values? What is your personal manifesto? You know, which is a bit of a riotous statement about why the heck you're here. What is it that you believe about the world? you know, how do you want to change the world, you know, and be as audacious as you want, and let those core values then that you've defined be your rudder on how you're going to navigate, right? Because I can be passionate about something but act like a complete jackass, you know, mm-hmm, on the way right. to get there. But and that's why those core values are important to go deep on. This is what matters. This is how I want to impact people. And this is the kind of integrity in which I want to live my life. So now I've got, you know, that morality that's sort of built in. And now when somebody asks me, Hallie, what do you need? I can really answer that question because I'm connected to what I want, you know, what inspires me, as opposed mm-hmm. to in the past, Hallie, what do you want? I don't know, something to do, maybe some food, you know, or a bigger salary or, you know, instead of right. those topical things.
You know, it was interesting yesterday. I was sitting somewhere in a parking lot and I saw these people come out of the store and they drove off and I said, oh my gosh, they just threw all their garbage on the ground. And I'm thinking how disconnected that is and how we tend to sometimes be so focused on our path that we diss everything in its path too. You know, in other words, those people were just so intent on just taking care of themselves that they just threw their stuff on the ground. And I went, gosh, really? You know, yeah. I mean, do we not care about the business? Do we not care about the earth? Do we not care about the birds that are now coming to eat it or whatever? And, mm-hmm. you know, that's so... as I've said many times on this show, we just did not get dropped from storks. You know, there is a reason why we're here. There is right. a plan in the bigger world. The universe is a whole lot more than you can ever think about. Mm-hmm. Everything you think today is or is not true based on in the next second. We don't know that, and we never will know that. So life changes so many times, but we look at just how can we be more responsible in our path, too, because we don't want to say this is what I have, this is how I'm going to get it, and then break people or mm-hmm. really, you know, do terrible things to the environment or say this is the way I command it, and that's not really living, you know, a wholehearted living, because the wholehearted living, you don't live in a silo, you know, dude. You gotta,
you gotta
go outside and walk on that ground that somebody put it down, you know. So
exactly, yeah, and I think we've got enough
yeah.
of those people out there, you know, and you're exactly right in saying that the leaves of the tree in the analogy are our impact. It's exactly
right.
that, right?
Right?
So that we are always conscious of. You know, how am I impacting as I'm going about and serving out what will perhaps in the rearview mirror end up being my purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that's defined after the fact. I don't think we can put purpose out in front of us, but I do think we can connect with what we're passionate about and how we want to influence and impact the world. But, you know, we have to make sure we're doing it in a way, because I don't know about you. I mean, I know many people that are out there that are, you know, mm-hmm. successful as we would define in terms of, you know, good old lingo, but their trees are in permanent winter. You know, their relationships
right.
are empty. Their companies are hollow. You know, and the mm-hmm. words ring as hollow as anything else, and that's not what we want. We want a full, rich life, you know, all the way up to create an ecosystem that is healthy, not only just to ourselves, but all the trees, you know, in our vicinity and spreading out beyond that into the world.
You know, it's interesting. I had this. I was a dental hygienist in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I look back at the 70s, I had this one job, and I can remember being pregnant, and I was so sick. I mean, I'll tell you, laying flat on the ground, that was just not good enough. I could not find any good place. I was so sick. But anyway, I can remember on this Friday, I always had Fridays off, and the dentist says, well, we have a business office meeting, you have to come. And I said, no, I was sick, I wasn't coming. And he says, well, you're the one that's having the problem with the other girl in the office, you have to make sure you come, blah, blah, blah. And I can remember crawling and crawling, I mean literally crawling to the office to get there, sick as anything. And in this office meeting where, oh, the woman was saying, well, I don't feel needed. I don't feel like you are teaching me the right way. I don't feel like you value me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just kind of, okay, you know, I'll do whatever. And I look back on that these days, and I says, you know what? I had no responsibility to the way she responded. That was her business to get it. Or if it wasn't hers to get it to work there, then she needed to leave. I also should have never stayed there because then they infringed upon my morals, my rights, my core beliefs. I let those go and let the system take over. You know, so I think a lot of times now we're looking at it is, are we in jobs that aren't working? Everybody knows this. In the 90s, everybody had these kinds of jobs where it was the work and the work was the work. And boy, when cell phones came along, it was hell to pay because you had to be 24/7 all the time, you know?
Right.
So really, when you look at it, I didn't stand up for myself and say, you know what, I'm done with this. You know, this does not serve my inner being and taking care of myself or my unborn child. That other person, she needed to either stand up and quit whining, and she was 60 years old at the time, and I'm going, oh, really? And then, you know, and then you look at it and you say, well, these places need to start falling apart. So going back to what you were saying before is, what's going to fall apart around you? And can you say, you know what, heck, let it go. Don't try to justify it. Don't try to solution it. Don't try to patch it together. Say, you know what? Oh, man, I just need a clean house. We need to get over this. I need to find my core and start over. And I think that's what you try to teach in your book is what is your core and start over.
Yeah, you know, and hopefully maybe you don't have to start over, you know, like myself. I did, and the story in the book explains what happened to me, you know, where for me it was pretty much, you know, what I would call a yard sale of my life. You know, it was just like everything was up and out. And some of us go through that process. Others may be able to say, you know, I've had this itch or I've had this whisper.
Right.
See, I'm listening to this conversation. There's something here for me. So maybe I can pick up something as a starter and start to braid, you know, start to bring those things in and make more of that gradual shift instead of having to completely rip the Band-Aid off. But going back to what you're saying about, you know, when you start to compromise your values or compromise your own self-worth, you know, you start saying, okay, I'm gonna bargain and barter because I think that this is what's expected. I'm gonna leave this belief aside. You know, people take advantage of that. There's a lot of takers in the world, and I would say I was a bit naive earlier in my life, and I would attract a lot of these sort of energy vampires or control freaks. And then I realized why they loved me, because I would constantly put myself second. Like, okay, yeah, you know what? Let me help you out. And that got me absolutely nowhere.
I think that was a history. In other words, that's what's coming up in history. And you and I just get, like, in other words, we bounced down into it, into the time in history. Like, I don't think some, you know, that we see the millennials now, they won't tolerate some of that. But we see it quite often when women were so very subservient in the early 1900s. So it's kind of like how we bounced out of it. Do you know what I mean? Slowly but surely.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I think more than anything, it's just the awareness. Honestly, I think a lot of us just need the awareness that's not what it's all about. Pleasing others and getting kudos, whether we're doing things for others or we're purchasing things that we feel others might admire in us, it's a no-win situation.
Yeah, it just gets you absolutely nowhere these days, I think. Sometimes you will find it, it's just like, you know, this is so over it. And I think really the onset of the internet, because if we remember, I've said many times on the show before, is we only really knew what the people around us were telling us or reflecting on us in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You know, you had your small library on the corner, and it had the books, and that was the only really, you know, connection you had to the outside world. Along comes the internet and said, hey, you know, I'm over here in England, and hey, it's not this way. I'm over here in Italy, and we don't live like that. Hey, I'm in Mexico. This is what I think. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it really opened us up to, instead of being our or certain communities and our certain whatever ancestral lineage or whatever we are, it really opened us up to, no, this is the world and you're part of the world. You're not just part of this community. So it really kind of took off, I think.
That's right. Feedback is always good. We all need feedback. And to get that culturally, you know, from other cultures and nations is so good because we do. We get hyper-focused. And why wouldn't we? You know, we're right here. We're trying to get through this life. You know, we have these brains that are sort of still useful in terms of the limbic system, but a lot of it is a bit outdated. But our brains haven't evolved to accommodate that, to understand we're not being chased by lions, but yet, you know, so instead of a real lion chasing us, we create lions. We either turn on ourselves or we create these, you know, amazing, grandiose tales of what she would have done to me, you know, or the other.
Right.
And we lose that perspective, right, that, hang on, it doesn't have to be this way. In fact, it probably isn't this way. We're just creating our own virtual reality time and time again and then choosing to live in it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. In closing, I remember so many times I help counsel others and I say, is it that way? And they're like, yeah. I said, okay, good. Take out a notebook and I want you to write every single time. I want you to write every single thing. Write me the entire story. Don't leave any words out. And for God's sake, don't stop until you're finished. Make sure you keep going and going. Finally, by the end of 2 weeks, if you're not tired of doing that, you know, and then you can get another 2 weeks to do that. And then you can whine and cry about it. And then finally it's like, oh, what a waste of time. You know, yeah, it's a waste of time, you know, because you just have to work that self out. And I think sometimes, depending on your age group, you really need to work a lot of that old pattern out. And when you work all that old pattern out, then you can say, phew, man, I'm done with that. Sort of like cleaning your house, you know. And,
that's,
you know,
right.
We see this, you know, when people, I had spoken to someone the other day, I said, you know, oh, that gosh, that person just died yesterday. And they said, yeah, let's go buy the house. So we went by the house and all their stuff was on the street already. You know, so if you think that all of that stuff that you're collecting, all these things you're thinking about in your minds, all of those little tchotchkes that you're putting in the closet and everything for everybody, the day you're gone, it's out on the street. So stop worrying so damn much. You know what I mean?
That's right.
It's like,
exactly.
Just
yes.
Let it.
From someone who just moved their household, it travel light, my friends, in every way, travel light. Yeah.
It's like, let it go, people. Let it go, you know. Oh, goodness. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Hallie. And if you could share a little bit about your information, about how we could find out more information about the book and all, that would be great.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thanks again for having me with your show and your audience. You can find the book. It's Life Incorporated, A Practical Guide to Wholehearted Living. I use the word term practical in there because I'm a great, you told me what I need to do, now show me some ideas. So there's a lot of exercises in the book to get you off and running. You can find the book on Amazon as well as BarnesandNoble.com. And then if you need any resources from the book or you want to connect with me personally, you can find me at www.lifeincorporated.co. Lifeincorporated.co.
Well, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. I think really it's a tough haul for a lot of people, but if we try to put everybody in a box and we say just, you know, this is follow me, really that gets kind of sticky. So when you in your book, you know, when you give the examples and you say a little bit to delve out, you know, into yourself and find a little bit more information about yourself, I think that's a little bit easier because then you can kind of create what you wish to see in life instead of following it, you know, someone else's imprint. So it's a really great book.
Thank you. I appreciated that. Appreciate that comment. I worked very hard for that. I wanted to find a form that could hold a lot of different lives and not be so prescriptive. So
that's
a great compliment.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure to have you.
You bet. Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Hallie Bach, again, the book is Life Incorporated, A Practical Guide to Wholehearted Living. Please check on the bottom of today's show page. There is a link directly to the website, and you'll be able to find out more about blogs, books, information, and tips, and just check it out. Never know what you might find. And really, it is difficult sometimes for some people to say, I'm really up against a wall. The answer is okay, just reach out and ask. check out our shows. We have over 400 of them. And you never know, something someone might say, you'll say, oh, cool. We say it a million different ways. We say it with a million different guests, and we're all here to be able to share and say it's going to be okay. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.